The sermon I'll be reading today is titled, Give Them Not Hell, by Chaplain David Pyle. At 20 years old, I was a newly promoted sergeant in the United States Army. I was a paratrooper assigned as an intelligence analyst to the 7th Special Forces Group at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I had left behind my Southern Baptist faith on the fields of the Airborne School at Fort Benning, Georgia, because I did not believe it was God who would keep me safe when I jumped out of an airplane, but rather my training, my fellow soldiers, and the guy who packed my chute. In other words, I came to believe that our destiny is in our own hands, not in the hands of a deity. I had become a deist. One afternoon, as I stepped outside the post exchange and put my beret on my head, I saw a large man, an officer, standing around the exit, shaking hands with soldiers. I knew what he was before I even saw the cross resting where his rank should be. He was a chaplain, doing what chaplains are supposed to do, talking to soldiers. The last thing in the world I wanted to do was talk to a chaplain who was probably some evangelical fundamentalist wanting to save my soul. That was okay. I developed a way to deal with such chaplains. As I saluted him, he returned the salute and then put his hand out to shake mine and, reading my rank and name tag, said, "Hello, Sergeant Pyle. How are you today?" "Fine, sir," I replied as I stopped to talk with him. "It's just not proper protocol to blaze on by an officer who wants to talk to you." "I don't talk to chaplains much because I'm a deist, sir." Usually the word deist would send even the most evangelical missionary running away at top speed, but not this time. "A deist, wow, I don't get to meet those very often. Let me tell you about Unitarian Universalism." It was the first time I had ever heard those two words, Unitarian Universalism. I had indeed found an evangelical, but one from our faith tradition. I distinctly remember thinking that this particular chaplain was crazy, as he described a faith based on covenant rather than in some creed, where deists would be accepted along with atheists, agnostics, Christians, humanists, and many others. A church where it was okay to believe that God made the universe and then left. Preposterous. Years later, when I had returned from Bosnia, a scarred and scared young man who was looking for some organization, some religion that would allow me to make meaning in my life from the aftermath and atrocities of a religious hatred-inspired war that I had borne witness to, I remembered that chance encounter with a crazy chaplain, and I remembered those two words, Unitarian Universalism. It took a couple of tries and a couple of different Unitarian Universalist churches before I found one that became my spiritual home. That home, a UU fellowship on Galveston Island on the Gulf Coast of Texas, nurtured me, held me, and eventually allowed me to hear my own call to the ministry. A call that led me to be one of two UUs attending the U.S. Army Chaplain School. At the same time, Chaplain Colonel Vernon Chandler, the man who first said the words Unitarian Universalism to me, was retiring from the Army after 33 years of service. At his retirement ceremony, Chaplain George Tiger and I had the privilege to salute Captain Chandler and say, "We relieve you, sir," to the man who had first introduced me to this faith, to the faith that saved me, healed me after serving as a soldier in Latin America and a peacekeeper in Bosnia and Herzegovina. It was 10 years from when I first met Chaplain Chandler to when I joined a Unitarian church, UU church. For 10 years, that seed had been planted in the hard-packed soil of my life, the life of a political conservative, a religious rejectionist, and an angry ex-Christian. It took 10 years of the experiences of my life, seeing atrocities and genocide, a divorce, two changes of career, 10 years of experiences to shake the soil of my life loose enough for that seed to grow. But grow it did. All from a 2-minute conversation outside the post exchange with a chaplain enthusiastic about our liberal faith. As that seed sprouted, it continued to loosen the soil of my life until I turned off Rush Limbaugh and Fox News and began listening to NPR and the BBC. It shook loose the soil covering my heart until I could begin to feel a connection with those around me and not just dwell on my own anger and pain. That seed shook loose the anger and fear I felt after Bosnia and brought me to a vision of hope and possibility, of interdependence and inherent worth, all from a 2-minute conversation outside the post exchange with a chaplain enthusiastic for our liberal faith. As that seed sprouted, it loosened up the rejectionist theology that was the power behind my deism and allowed me to grow spiritually beyond merely rejecting an interventionist concept of God. That seed was soon joined by other seeds, which allowed me to begin to explore and find a connection with Zen Buddhism and begin a meditation practice. Another seed allowed me to really feel the ideas of universal salvation, of the ever-changing nature of revelation in my life, and to feel released by an idea of forgiveness that was centered in human relationship and not in divine punishment. That first seed and the gentle tilling of our liberal faith even allowed the planting of a seed that called me to reapproach the Christian scriptures, not from the anger of my teens and 20s, but with the spirit of a seeker, and to find that the center of my theology and the way I wanted to live my life was in the teachings of that particular poor carpenter's son turned rabbi from the village of Nazareth. Through the theologies of the Unitarian and Universal Christians of the 1700s and 1800s, I discovered I was still a Christian. All from a 2-minute conversation outside the post exchange with a chaplain enthusiastic for our liberal faith. When I say I believe in the saving power of our UU good news, our gospel, I speak from the personal experience of having been saved. These are some hard-to-use words in a Unitarian Universalist congregation, but I really mean them. Might I have become a UU without the chance meeting with that crazy military chaplain outside the post exchange at Fort Bragg? It was possible, probable even. For a veterans counselor later also recommended I check out a UU church. While I was not a UU at heart when I left for Bosnia, I certainly was one when I came home. Instead, I tell the story of my journey into this faith tradition as a way to address some of the common myths we UUs have about military chaplaincy. Myths that I believe have caused great damage to the chaplain corps and to the lives of many soldiers. Don't worry, the chief of chaplain's office has heard me say all this and much more before. If there's one thing that my fellow chaplains understand about UUs is that we are not very good at keeping our mouths shut. Besides, I'm a reservist, so what are they going to do? Make me take a weekend off once a month? Give me a little more freedom to speak truth to power than my active duty colleagues have. I'm a full-time UU parish minister. Military chaplaincy is what I do for fun. The first myth I want to address is that we UUs and those people who join the military were just different kinds of people. I cannot count the times I've preached or spoken to groups of UUs and see the looks of incredulity when I say that I meet UUs all the time in the military. People who believe about life and faith as we do, people called to live ethical and moral lives in community, who find truth to be larger than one scripture or one religion, and who are called to make a difference in the world. I meet them all the time, and either they've never heard of Unitarian Universalism, or they attended one of our churches once, and as soon as they said they were in the military, they were questioned or ridiculed or in some way told that they were not welcome in this faith tradition. This myth has some truth, but it is not that people in the military are not ready for us. It's that we're not ready for them. There are some churches that do it well, mostly around major military installations. A UU Navy chaplain named Seanan Howland worked with the Church of the Larger Fellowship a few years ago to create the Military Bridge Builder Program, a course similar to the Welcoming Congregation Program to help our churches bridge this gap. The second myth that I think has prevented us from having a large and vibrant military ministry has been the idea that we Unitarian Universalists would not make good military chaplains. I'll answer this myth with a short story. I remember one day when I was a student at the U.S. Army Chaplain School at Fort Jackson in South Carolina. We were on a break between classes, and a young conservative evangelical minister came over and sat next to me. He was genuinely curious about Unitarian Universalism, although not all of them are, and asked some very specific questions about our faith. Over that summer, I became really good at explaining Unitarian Universalism to evangelical and Baptist ministers, as I had this experience at least a few times a day. After I spoke about our being a faith where actions and behavior mattered more than belief, about the importance of community, the importance of professional ministerial preparation, and about learning from the truth that expands across religious traditions, he sat back and asked another question. He asked, "Well, then why aren't there hundreds of Unitarian Universalist military chaplains? You are all perfect for this ministry. The Army must love you." You see, all the parts of military ministry that my colleagues struggled with, such as the need to present worship in a broad, inclusive way, or the ability to help someone explore their own faith rather than impose your own, or the requirement to minister to and with people who believe things you might find wrong or offensive, all these parts of military chaplaincy that he was struggling with, he saw that UU ministers do all of these things as part of our basic practice of ministry, a part of who we are. I won't say that we are ideally suited for military ministry because not all UU ministers can function in a military authoritative structure, but some of them can. The third myth that I think gets in the way of Unitarian Universalist military ministry, be it that of military chaplains or of congregations, like the Great Lakes Naval Station Ministry in Illinois, where the Chicago area congregations come together to provide Sunday morning UU worship for the Navy basic training recruits. The third myth is that such a ministry violates our ethical, moral, and social justice principles. As a military chaplain, I am precluded by international law from carrying a weapon, and by military tradition, I'm not even allowed to touch one. I personally could not serve otherwise. My personal faith would not allow it. Recently, we UUs have had three of our military chaplains serving in Afghanistan, and all three of them ministered amid some of the horrors of this war. Chaplain Chris Antel is there right now, and chaplains George Tiger and Sean in Holland just recently came home. If you do not think that bringing a gospel of hope, interdependence, and inherent worth to those soldiers and Marines in the midst of war is social justice, then I think you've seriously misunderstood the meaning of social justice. I can't think of any more important social justice work for our nation right now than helping these soldiers and Marines realize their own humanity and the humanity of those we call enemy. Efforts to dehumanize the enemy might show some short-term effect in battle, but we now know that it is one of the primary factors that lead toward contracting a combat stress disorder. Add to that that military ministry is one of the UUA's few truly multi-ethnic, multicultural ministries, and one of our few young adult ministries, and perhaps the military has some social justice lessons to teach us as well. And quite frankly, if you're going to have a military, and if we are as a nation are going to send that military off to fight a war, then I want as many UUs wearing the military uniform as possible. I want soldiers to ask moral questions. I want soldiers who see that we're all interconnected. I want soldiers who realize we're accountable for what we do in life. And the military knows that when they need to know what the liberals think about something, they should go ask a UU military chaplain. More than once, I have had the honor and privilege to be involved in conversations that were way above my pay grade, because as a UU, I am out as a liberal in the military. Just one example was that I served on one of the working groups that developed the implementation plan for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and was authorized to speak to the press about the repeal. I've been involved in conversations about the use of drones in warfare, the unconscionably high rate of military suicide, substance abuse and divorce, conversations about combat stress injuries, and so much more. I've been invited to the table because I am a UU minister, and the military knows it needs our perspective, our voice. Most of my fellow UU chaplains say that they have had similar experiences of speaking our truth in a community where we UUs have for years gone unheard. So why am I preaching all this to you? Though I've learned not to be surprised, I'm not hoping that there is someone out there who is now inspired to go to seminary and become a military chaplain. Truthfully, how much longer these knees and hips of mine can keep up with my soldiers is a question I am asking with some regularity. I've brought this message to you this morning so that maybe, just maybe, we can change a little bit of our perspective on what it means to be in the military and what it might mean if a military family, and at this point I'm changing the military facilities that he mentions because he speaks about those that are close to Tennessee. So I'm changing this, just this part. So what it would mean to a military family, say from Marine Corps Air Station Miramar or Camp Pendleton, or one of the thousands of Reserve and National Guard families that are in the San Diego area, what would it mean if they started attending? How would we be welcoming of them? How would we have to change to be welcoming of them? How would we as a church and a faith tradition have to grow to welcome these families and their stories among us? Our religious tradition has modern-day circuit riders who go into the hinterlands and the borderlands, bringing the message of interdependence, universal salvation, and the faith, hope, and love that Paul called us to. We call them military chaplains. And I bring them before you this morning to ask you, what would it mean for you to follow their example and become circuit riders in your own life and take our faith out to the hinterlands and the borderlands? Our Universalist forebears were given this charge when they went out into the world. Go out into the highways and byways. Give the people something of your new vision. You may possess a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and everlasting love of God. May it be. Blessed be. And amen.